Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 196th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Come on in. Chat room is open. Talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability as possible. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last show before we go and review every single World Cup date and day that we're going to have daily show. I'm going to have plenty of great guests coming on. Once again, we're going to have, covering Italy, Diana Germano, England, my good friend Gary Richards, former Fox Soccer analyst. We're going to have Jonathan Johnson, who covers France for ESPN FC, beIN Sports USA, as well as other outlets in Europe. We're going to also have Eric Krakauer, who will cover Portugal for Soccerly and football.com. John Jagu will be covering Mexico for Big Soccer. Will be on the show. We just got Mr. Marios C. Svatos. He'll be covering Greece for some of you that want to know what's going on with the Greeks. He'll be helping us with the Greek matches afterwards and a lot of other fun. We're going to try to keep on adding more people before this thing gets underway this coming Thursday, June the 12th, 2014. And, you know, as we are about a good 2 to 3 days away from this tournament, this World Cup getting underway here, something needs to be said with you guys, and I'm going to basically be, it's really a tough thing to see what's going on out there. It's really a tough thing to see when you have a situation where, you know, I do agree with you guys. Landon Donovan should never have been left off this roster. And while, you know, trying to be as diplomatic as possible about this situation, about Landon, I wanted you guys to have your own opinions. I wanted you guys to weigh the pros and cons about this, probably the biggest firestorm probably since the USA going as far as into the quarterfinals in the 2002 World Cup, beating Mexico in the World Cup in the second round in that 02 World Cup in the South Korean department back then. And let's be honest with ourselves here, because while it would have been great to see Landon Donovan go out within the blaze of glory, and is probably this would have been his final World Cup if he was picked, then we can all move on properly to the next cycle, which would be 2018 Russia. Let me make no bones about it. I was very annoyed. I'm going to be very kind about it. I was annoyed that Landon Donovan took this sabbatical. I was very, very annoyed that he took that four-month sabbatical, because the truth is that he basically put his national team career directly into Jurgen Klinsmann's hands when he should have just said, I'm ready to come back, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to train, let's go to Honduras in February of 2013, because if I'm down in Honduras, that means that we're going to pull a point or we're going to take a win. Now, regardless, it probably would have happened anyway if there weren't mistakes made by that in that game. That's the truth. That is the truth. If mistakes weren't made in that game, the U.S. probably takes a point out of it. But once again, we don't know what would have happened if Landon was there for the first six games for qualifying. This whole situation, not going to get into the whole, well, now soccer is on the map because Landon Donovan was informed he's not on the roster going to Brazil. While that's partially true that we have made it as a soccer nation, the truth is that more needs to be done here. I'll be honest with you. Not that I was rooting for Donovan not to be on the roster, because that's not true. The truth of the matter is that Landon got what he deserved, unfortunately. But should he still be on this roster? And I will say yes. But if we're going to be fair here to everything that's been going on to Klinsmann, the truth is that he did the right thing. He did what he had to do. He had to take the players that were ready to go and were probably a little bit more fitter and a little bit more better. Is Landon Donovan better coming off the bench this time around if you need a big goal to tie a match or to take a lead? Yes. There's no doubt in my mind that Landon Donovan is good enough, strong enough to come off the bench and to give the USA a better opportunity to win or pull a point out of their rear ends. That is the truth. But we also have to understand what he did on the process of getting there, getting to this decision. We also have to get to the point of he did. In between missing those games and missing important training days for the national team because he took that sabbatical. Some are saying Klinsmann took it personal. You know what? If he did, he shouldn't have done it. That's my honest opinion. If he took it personal, Jurgen Klinsmann, he shouldn't have done it. But at the same time, Landon did this all on his own. He did this. He brought this down all by himself. Both sides are at fault. Both. Klinsmann is at fault. Donovan is at fault for this situation that happened. It should never have happened. Because both men allowed this to personally affect them. But now, I don't think this is 2018. That would be foolish of Jurgen Klinsmann to all of a sudden say, let's go towards 2018. You know, once again, I had a listener come on my chat room for the post-game show when the USA were, you know, they lost badly. I know it was only 2-0 against the Ukraine and Cyprus, but still. He screamed in the chat room, change the roster, get rid of all the players, they're not good. And meanwhile, the players were basically coming from Europe. So the roster hasn't been set for the World Cup, yet I had a listener complain about everyone was crap. Even Tim Howard was crap when it's not his fault that he got beat like that. Regardless of what's going to happen, what I don't like to see from pundits and fans saying, guess what? No Donovan, no goals, no points. while, yes, this is a strong and tough group for the United States to try and get out of, I still feel it's possible for them to get into the second round. Once you get out of the group, all bets are off, because that right now is the most important thing on the minds of Jürgen Klinsmann, on the players, and all of you. I know it's going to be difficult. Every World Cup group is difficult. Whichever group you get drawn with, whichever team you get drawn with, you hope it'll be a good, solid opportunity to move forward into the next round. Ghana will be a tough, tough team. There's no doubt about it. But if they can find a way to, A, take a lead, B, score a little more than two goals, C, if they do allow a goal, to try and keep it a one-goal lead, or at least if it's a three-goal match, two-goal lead, whatever it is, the lead, and then get 3 points, and then you can worry about Ronaldo and Portugal, because if you lose this first match, it's over. Getting a point means that you're still alive, but barely. I understand there's been a couple of things written here and there in the past. Oh, it's Ghana again. Well, this time they're gonna do it this time. We've seen in the past Ghana always takes the U.S. seriously, and they found ways to win. Go in this match with respect. You go into this match knowing that Ghana is a tough opponent, and you don't assume it's a three-pointer. This is going to be difficult, very, very difficult. Everyone has to watch this game. If you're going to be a little apprehensive, I don't blame you, because they lost 2-1 in a game where, to be honest, they needed a draw. And unfortunately, that penalty hurt them in the final group stage match game in Germany for the World Cup. Last year, in the second round, they allowed Ghana to score an easy goal at the start of regulation. They allowed Ghana to score an easy goal at the beginning of extra time. This is the time where the U.S. must score first. It is important that he must score first, because if they don't score first, there could be a problem. Is Jozy Altidore and Clint Dempsey the ones to do it? I think they are. But once again, this is an opponent that must be taken seriously, not to be taken lightly. And if they go by whatever game plan they go towards, and if the back line is strong enough to prevent any Ghana attack, the USA will get 3 points. Be aware, everyone. Be aware, and that also goes for Jürgen Klinsmann and for our boys wearing the red, white, and blue shirts. Ghana is not a pushover. They will find a way to go out and to embarrass them and to take them down like they did the last two times. Is it the USA's turn? It should be. But once again, we will never know once that opening whistle blows. Follow me here, For Your Scenes Fire, for your World Cup coverage. Every single date, there's a World Cup match, including the USA, facing Ghana, Portugal, Germany, and if they do advance out of the group, whatever happens in the knockout stages. Follow me here. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a great show for you tonight. We're going to talk about the whole Michael Wilbon, Jürgen Klinsmann situation. NASL segment, congratulations to Minnesota United FC for winning the NASL spring title. Automatically goes into the playoffs. We'll have a recorded interview with John Marthaler. The Red Bull Hour has been reduced to a segment for half an hour, talking about that big 2-0 victory over at Gillette Stadium. But joining me tonight is a good friend of mine, not only in soccer but in hockey. Of course, it's my good friend Kevin Laramie from the Off the Woodwork podcast. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, if you are hockey fans, join us for the next installment of the Uncensored Hockey Show on iTunes. Especially follow us on Twitter at @UHockeyShow. Right, Kevin?
Absolutely. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great, but boy, oh boy, Montreal, they've had a bad season to start with, and now you've won that Canadian championship again. You beat Toronto. It was a 1-1 draw after the first leg over at BMO Field. You head back to Stade Saputo. You hold them off for most of the match, and then, of course, Montreal with a big goal, 2-1 on aggregate.
Felipe scored. Campione del mondo del Canada. Montreal repeat again for the Canadian Championship, which is great because now you get to go play extra games in the CONCACAF Champions League against the New York Red Bulls of all team. And
exactly.
CD Fass from Salvador. Yes. But it's great. It was a great atmosphere last Wednesday at Stade Saputo. It was not a lot of people. I think you have the same problem with the U.S. Open Cup because it's a different organization. They don't have the same sales team behind those games, but it was a great night. Montreal got a chance to raise silverware. It's always fun.
Yes, it is, especially against Toronto. Of course, we've always talked about it. It doesn't matter what sport up in Canada is, baseball, well, when it was baseball, hockey, the Canadian Football League, and now soccer. Montreal, Toronto, it's always been a big, big rivalry on the eastern side of the country. And once again, that big goal that happened, that I would have to say this, obviously if it would have stayed 1-1, you had the away goal, so it was still solid. But you really
but
needed that second goal to feel comfortable.
Oh, yeah, they really did, because Toronto hit the post twice. Di Rosario and Osorio hit the post off the woodworks, as we could say, no pun intended. And it was Montreal had to literally grind it out, get a result, and it all started a week ago. A week before that, Frank Lopez got up in the locker room and gave a hearted speech to his players. He says, guys, you need passion to play. At this level, it's unacceptable. You need to put all your passion in. If you don't want to, it's fine. The door is right there, and you can take it if you like, and don't let it hit you on your way out. But if you want to stay in my locker room, if you want to stay in my team, if you want to play, if you want to put passion into it, I'm going to put some more, and I expect more from you. And after that, they came out, and they beat New England. And after that, they came out, and they won the Cup. And I think it's the spark that Montreal needed to finally ride this season.
Obviously, Frank Klopas comes in after Schellenbaum decided to leave or was basically sacked by Montreal. Do you see what Klopas is trying to do now with Montreal? I mean, I know it was a rough start, but are you seeing what he's trying to do with this Montreal team now? Are they starting to get a little bit better, or do you think there's still some problems?
I think it's finally starting to fall into place. The last couple of weeks, he's been playing with rotating the squad effectively in the last couple of weeks, and we've never seen that in Montreal in 3 years in Major League Soccer. Jesse Marsh had a problem with that, and Marshall Schellenbaum had a problem with that. Montreal had a great beginning of the season last year. It was almost a fluke, but by using always the same starting 11, so it's not a rotation. This season, it's been the exact opposite. We saw trades with players like Issei Nakajima-Ferran, INF, it's easier to pronounce. INF had a great debut for Montreal with having an impact, again, no pun intended, on the game. As you rarely see in Major League Soccer a Canadian being that effective in his first game with a brand new team. It's great to see. And you see Klopas changing the way he handles himself with the team now than the beginning of the season. In Montreal, we all know that it's a passionate city. It's a mix of Europe, of North America, and wherever else in the world. It's a very multicultural city, and you need passion. And the beginning of the season, Klopas was always a little more calm, more reserved, always sitting almost during the games. And in the last couple of weeks, we saw a different Klopas. We saw fired up. He was fired up, Klopas. He was screaming at the players in a positive way, trying to transmit his energy to them. And you see the difference in the last couple of games, just the way the team looked on the pitch and the way the pace it had. It finally has found its heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like Montreal's starting to, let's be honest here. It's still a big hole to dig yourself out of, but, you know, you have the break now. And then, of course, you're going to move forward here. I think it's you got a match against DC United this Wednesday. And then afterwards, off you go, and you have a break, and then, the standings right now are definitely not in Montreal's favor, even though you are in last with 10 points. But still, you're only 3 points behind Chicago.
And only 9 points out of the playoffs. And we all know that in Major League Soccer, it's always how you finish, right?
Exactly. It's all how you finish. It's not how you start, but it's how you finish. But do you feel confident? Because let's be honest now. Now, including the CONCACAF Champions League, you got 3 games remaining against the New York Red Bulls. You got you have 2 trips now to Red Bull Arena. How do you feel about your chances against the Red Bulls, and especially this El Salvadorian club, which I understand they're a very tough team at home?
Oh, for sure. At home, they're going to be very dangerous. On the road, it's going to be probably a very different story. Usually, those type of teams don't travel well. Like I talked on my Two Salters podcast today with Dwayne Rollins, who's going to come out a little later tonight, we had a little discussion about the Canadian, maybe the CONCACAF, and how the state of Canadian soccer. And we talked about how in the CONCACAF Champions League, Montreal has maybe a shot. It all depends on how the New York Red Bulls go into that tournament. We all know the last couple of years they did not take the tournament 100% seriously. They use it for squad rotation and keeping good playing time for everyone. And so that's what I said to my co-host, Dwayne. Depending on how the Red Bulls play and what type of team they put, it will dictate if Montreal has a shot or not. If those Henri and Cahill in a month from now and those players don't travel to Salvador, it might reflect how New York is thinking about that tournament. So it's going to be interesting to see that.
It will be. Also depends on if Foss uses the field turf or they use the regular grass. But I will say this. I can definitely tell you that if there's going to be some rotation, maybe I will find out what happens. You know, Ryan Mera has always been a very good keeper. They might use him. But I keep on arguing that if they're going to use Mera, they should use him during a league match, the match before a Champions League match. I've always considered that to be very important to take. You know, when you had Perkins, which you still have Perkins, I remember in the last edition, they used the backup, Montreal.
Same,
and I've always been my opinion is, look, these are just important. I mean, it's not UEFA Champions League, but that doesn't mean anything. It's a Champions League. You got to go out there and you got to put your best starting 11 and your best bench players ready for substituting right out there. Just go for it and just be strong. That's how I feel. I don't know how you see it.
Well, we are both soccer guys. For us, it's a sexy competition because we like soccer and we know the history of the Champions League. For the majority of fans and the majority of just casual soccer followers, the CONCACAF Champions League doesn't ring a bell. It's a competition that has a great potential, but it seems like it's still like a decade out of being a relevant competition. It seems like it's lacking its prestige just because some American and Mexican team, which are the best teams in those competitions, still not taking that competition for what it is. They're still using it as almost a stepping stone to get better in their own leagues. And the mentality of those teams needs to change if the CONCACAF Champions League wants to be what it can be, because between you and me, that competition has a lot of potential, but it just, the format might not just be great. The 3-team groups stage, I have unfair for a lot of teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you, and that's the one thing it needs to get better with. It needs to get better being taken seriously by all these teams that qualify for it, because this is going to be a very, very interesting group, of course, with the Red Bulls, Montreal, and Club Deportivo FAS. So it's going to be a fun, fun summer when August rolls around. Of course, schedule has not come out yet. We'll wait for it. But other than that, Montreal right now, and like we've said already, it's not how you start the season, it's how you finish. But still, is there confidence that Montreal can get out of the rut? Is there confidence that Montreal right now can dig themselves out of the hole? Because I understand, and even though you know French better than I do, but I do understand that the Montreal Ultras were not happy with management. I believe it's Nick Desantis, and they want him gone. Is that the case?
Yeah, they've won and gone for many, many years. It's a battle that's been happening on many different fronts for a long time. Just the fact that Nick DeSantis is in the same family as the owner, and he seems a little protected, has always irritated a lot of fans and support. And for good reason, but he did do some good moves in the last couple of years and did do some very bad moves as the Nelson Rivas and everything. We'll take it for what it is. He was the only person missing in the champion's photo taken after the match. It might mean something. It might mean nothing at all. I'll take it for what it is. I don't know. And you would have asked me a couple months ago. I was telling you I don't see any future. I don't see the land in the tunnel. But after the last week and a half of seeing the improvement in a week and a half was better than the last 3 months, it makes me I'm feeling more encouraged. Especially when I see Kolbas having a fire inside him. No pun intended, because he was a coach of fire again. It's great to see the change of mentality slowly happening in Montreal. And hopefully with the great thing that happened, with Fruity Dansault coming, with Meshack Jerome, Haitian international, 24 years old. I used to play for Kansas City last season, so he's a champion. He's a winner. So it's going to be both players. Smell of the CONCACAF Champions League just for death. But it's great. We're actually planning our trip into the CONCACAF Champions League this season. And I think it's going to give, it's going to shine positively on Major League Soccer for the Montreal Impact for the rest of the season.
If there's one thing you think Montreal needs to change, change the mood, shall we say, with, well, obviously it's a positive now because you're in the CONCACAF Champions League, but if you feel there's one thing that Montreal needs to change to maybe get into a better situation, and obviously the summer window's coming very shortly after this World Cup, what do you think Montreal needs, or who do you think Montreal needs to improve in what position?
Well, the feeling in general of not feeling sorry for themselves have been better the last 2 weeks. If you were looking at the, looking at the actual body language of the players on the pitch, they were getting angry and frustrated easily, and they were almost giving up on a long ball. Or, you know, those 50-50 plays when Hart can give you the ball if you really want that possession? Well, they were not doing that. And we saw the change last week and a half again, last 10 days. So a big difference of mentality. And I think that's important. But for me, right now, it's going to sound like it's a blasphemy. But for me, McInerney has surpassed Avila this season. And that's very important. McInerney is probably one of the hottest strikers in the league right now with Dom Dwyer, which is a great season again for him. But McInerney looks really good, and Happy Jack can be the solution for Montreal if we can get over the fact that we're paying a couple million for a player that just plays 30, 40 minutes, maybe not from now on.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. There seems to be a lot of work in progress, I think, this time around with Frank Lopez's system in Montreal. I mean, hopefully it doesn't take a full season to right things, but obviously right now I think they're on the positive step at the moment by advancing into the CONCACAF Champions League, winning the Amway Canadian Championship. But once again, this guy's a busy guy. He doesn't have me doing hockey. He's got Dwayne Rollins from the 24th Minute blog, as well as from the CSN group. He has Dwayne Rollins doing what? Five Rings podcast for Olympic discussion. Two Solitudes.
And right now we have the Five Rings podcast World Cup edition starting this Friday, once or twice every couple of days. It's an international event, right? So we felt that it actually belonged on Five Rings because it's like the Olympics. It's so big. It touches more than just the sport aspect of it. So we talk about all that, social events and the social aspect of those World Cup games on the Five Rings podcast as well for the duration of the tournament.
And then, of course, there'll be the Pan American Games. And then, of course, there'll be these games. There'll be those games and that game and whatever game you can find. This guy is a busy guy.
And I have to say, we're the only amateur sports and Olympic sports podcast in the entire world, the Five Rings Olympic podcast.
Yep, absolutely. That's for sure. And don't forget, everyone, you can listen to Kevin, Laramie, and myself with the Uncensored Hockey Show, at U Hockey Show on Twitter. And hopefully, you know, you're a future producer of shows up in Canada. You should win some sort of an award for some sort of Emmy or whatever it is that goes on up there. Whatever the award is. Yeah, you should win exactly. Whatever award it is up there, you should win it.
Thank you very much, Dan.
No problem at all, Kevin. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you after Game 3. All right, that's Kevin Laramie from the Off the Woodwork podcast on the Montreal Impact and many, many other podcasts that he does discussing whatever is on his mind. And I bet you if he does a baseball one, he'd do that too. But moving on here, and you know, moving on about what was said and what was discussed with the whole Landon Donovan situation, reported in the New York Times with Jurgen Klinsmann, of course, comparing Landon Donovan to Kobe Bryant. And ESPN's, pardon the interruption, co-host Michael Wilbon had a couple of words to say about it, about that situation. And you have to say that Mr. Wilbon, I think he took it a little too personal with that article, and he defended Kobe Bryant. Now, let me just say about Michael Wilbon, he is an excellent sports writer for the Washington Post. I know he writes for one of the Washington, D.C. newspapers in our nation's capital. And, you know, he's a very, very entertaining announcer, show host for ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, especially covering the NBA and everything else like that. Michael Wilbon, I enjoy a lot when he talks. Now, you know, this is nothing – I'm not trying to make points here. I'm not trying to, you know, single him out. But if I can just say this, and if, you know, if you want to disagree with me, it's fine. If you want to argue for me, it's okay too, you know, whatever you guys want to do. But the truth of the matter is that I think we're mixing apples and oranges when Jurgen Klinsmann compares the situation with Kobe Bryant and Landon Donovan. Now, let me say that Kobe Bryant is a fantastic basketball player. We've seen him win many, many titles, winning 5 NBA championships. And, of course, when you talk about winning titles in a club or league way, this is where I think Mr. Wilbon maybe gets it a little bit differently and a little bit more – I don't want to say, you know, he's trying to make it sound like it's a nothing situation, but the truth of the matter is this. The truth of the matter is this. When you talk about the world game, soccer, football, however you want to do it, call it, you know, decipher it, a national team career is just as important as a club career. Kobe Bryant has won 2 Olympics gold medals. He has also won 1 FIBA championship with Team USA. When it comes to baseball, hockey, the national team level is not that important in North America. The only time it ever happens is when you have, in hockey, the World Junior Championships. And during the Stanley Cup playoffs, certain players who are not playing in the playoffs here in North America for the Stanley Cup is when you're playing for your country for the IIHF World Championship. The rinks are bigger, obviously, in European hockey. But the point is simple. National team career for those three sports, you really can't count the National Football League because, let's be honest, there is no National Football League outside of the U.S. And at the same time, when you had the original World League of American Football or when it became NFL Europe, that was more in the summertime. And that was more for those European teams to play because the soccer leagues were, of course, not being played in the summertime. I mean, we have to be honest with ourselves that there is no comparison here. And the reason is that, and it's the same thing with Derek Jeter for the New York Yankees. I mean, Derek Jeter had a great baseball career, and he's decided to call it quits before this season came around. Is he getting all these gifts now? Yes, because he is one of the greatest baseball players in Major League Baseball in North America. He's done many things well for the New York Yankees. He has been not just captain of the Yankees, but he has been one of baseball's great ambassadors. Yet this World Cup of Baseball, this World Baseball Classic, while it's a great idea, it's not run properly. And the truth of the matter is there is no international governing body for baseball in the world. There isn't. Major League Baseball is running this tournament. And I still get annoyed that this tournament is being played during spring training, where these players should be able to be with their baseball teams during spring training to get ready for the Major League Baseball season. The best time to do a World Baseball Classic would be after the World Series, where you have players that are the ones that you need can still play in this tournament when they have been eliminated from playoff contention or eliminated from making the playoffs, but then they can start doing their own spring training by going to camp and start working out. That's when I think this World Baseball Classic should be held. Kobe Bryant, what has he done for USA Basketball outside of the two dream teams, which I still am not happy about, because I still believe even in hockey we should have the college kids play for their country, because that's why 1980 happened, because we did it the right way. The college players, the professionals from Russia, and to be honest, the Russians should never have had professionals at all. I don't think Alexander, I mean, that's the thing. It's in Europe. They talk about, oh, you know, we want to win the Olympics and everything, but are you really an amateur player in the Olympics when you're playing hockey? No, you're a professional. You're playing in the professional leagues. How are you always determined to be an amateur if you're a professional hockey player playing in a professional league? And let's not forget, these things are done differently in Europe, because if Kobe Bryant was a soccer player, and let me just say, we know how much he loves soccer, football, Kobe Bryant. We know how much he loves the game of football, and he has a Barcelona shirt. And I think he would have made a great football player. Will he have played for the U.S. national team? That I don't know. I would like to think he would. But the point is that if he did play soccer, he would mean a lot more for his national team, just as much as he would have played for his club team. In Europe, the older you get, the more you're considered not to be a great player anymore. Or if you do have the ability to do it, you'll be considered coming off the bench as a super sub. Because, yes, does Kobe Bryant deserve the money he's getting from the Lakers? Of course he does. There's no doubt in my mind he deserves the money that he, for a great career he has had in the NBA. Do the Lakers deserve to give him that money? Yes. No doubt in my mind he deserves it. But the mentality is different. And Jürgen Klinsmann went a different way. Do I think Michael Wilbon went a little too far? I think he went a little too far, Michael Wilbon. I believe he went too far. But I'm not going to harp about it because, you know, this is his opinion right now, that he feels that, you know, what Jürgen Klinsmann said, he had no business saying it. But the truth is, that's his opinion. And I mean, that it's a different mentality from Europe. It's always been a different mentality in Europe when it comes to professional athletes here in the U.S. So I understand why Michael Wilbon is protecting and defending Kobe Bryant. I do understand. And he's got the right to do it, because he probably has a friendship with him on a professional level, maybe even on a personal level. But to say that, leave the country, don't bother coaching here anymore, that's going too far. that's going a little too far. And I think we can all agree that, you know, it's a different mentality, different mindset. We can also say, honestly, that when he probably calmed down, he probably regretted what he said. If not, hey, that's his opinion. This is America, as we all know and love. He's got the right to give his opinion about what Jurgen Klinsmann said. Do I personally feel he went a little overboard? Just a little bit. Not too much, just a little bit. Michael Wilbon, you know, he's a very, very talented writer, very smart man. And you know what? I don't have a big problem with what he said. I can understand why he felt it. Because this is not going after Landon Donovan. This is going after Kobe Bryant, where he felt that Kobe Bryant was being disrespected. I don't think Kobe Bryant would say he was disrespected by Jurgen Klinsmann. I don't believe that. But you don't know what other people are thinking at that time, and you don't know what other people are going to say at that time. And that's the situation that we have. We are basically people that want to see our national team do well. And once again, I still feel it's apples and oranges. It's apples and oranges. It's, you know, it's not really a huge problem in my mind, in my eyes. I really believe that if this is what Jurgen Klinsmann believes, and this is, and, you know, you go ahead, you talk to many people from within Europe. I mean, you know, look what happened with Thierry Henry when Arsenal wouldn't, you know, they didn't keep him. I mean, he did go to Barcelona. He did go to Barcelona. But the thing is that Arsenal felt that, you know, he wasn't going to deliver anymore, and they let him go. So he went to Barcelona. And look what happened. He won, within a calendar year, 6 championships, including the Champions League. And then Barcelona said, hey, we don't think that you're good enough anymore. And so that made him move to a Major League Soccer where, you know, he wanted to go. Now, I don't know if the board in Arsenal would have brought him back. I'm assuming the fans would have loved to see him come back. But the truth is that we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen. Still, though, there's a lot to be said here. And all I can say is, this. Different opinions, different gentlemen. But all I know is that for the guys that cover soccer and stuff like that, you know, look, I think this was blown well out of proportion. And I just think, I'm not saying it's a mistake, I'm just saying it all got heated for the wrong reasons, what I'm going to say. And I think I've been fair to Michael Wilbon, so we'll see what happens. And now we're going to talk about our final NASL spring season segment. Minnesota United FC only needed a draw to go into the playoffs for later on this year. And to talk about that is Mr. John Marthaler, who covers Minnesota United FC, the soccer blogger for the Star Tribune over in Minnesota. Not able to come on live with me tonight, but here he is on a recorded interview.
And once again, the final NASL spring season segment here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. And the gentleman that's going to be joining me right now, Mr. John Marthaler, covers Minnesota United FC on the soccer blog at thestartribune.com. John, thank you for the time.
Yeah, good to be here.
Oh, John, a spring season title, and once again, Manny Lagos finds a way to get this team to become basically, I think they're like in first place all season, and all you needed was a draw just to win the title.
Yeah, it certainly, they certainly didn't make it easy with a 3-3 draw down in Tampa. I'm sure most of the team's fans pretty much have no fingernails left after Saturday, but they got it done. They only needed a draw on Saturday, and they got the result they needed, and now they have a playoff spot.
Absolutely, and of course, I believe that's an automatic invite into the playoffs, and hopefully that would also lead to a Soccer Bowl appearance again. That would probably be, if it does happen, the second time within, what, 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, you know, they won the championship 3 years ago, I guess, now, and then lost in the championship to Tampa Bay 2 years ago. So they've been a regular championship series participant, so to speak, throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. And going through the schedule here with Minnesota United, boy, it's just amazing where that one match against the New York Cosmos over in Long Island, a 1-0 loss, a couple of draws here and there. But other than that, Minnesota's been absolutely solid all throughout the spring season.
Yeah, you know, they both, I think they finished second in the league in scoring goals and second in the league in goals allowed. You mentioned that match in New York that they did not play well at all in that match and ended up losing 1-0 to an awfully good goal from Marco Senna. But other than that, like you say, they have been pretty solid this year, and it translated. In past years, it seemed like that might have translated to a bunch of draws and a couple of wins, but this year they won 6 out of 9 games, and it was enough to take the spring championship.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, we all were worried about basically this season being a really, you know what they say in the trade, it's not a marathon, it's a sprint, but this was a marathon, to be honest. And were there any inklings that where Minnesota was like, okay, look, 9 games, put our heads down, let's just make it all count, and they did?
I think it was more along the lines of they got a couple of good results early in the season, and I think every team in the NASL this year knew that they just needed a short, good run of form in the spring season to be able to clinch that playoff spot. Obviously, this year with the NASL format, with the spring season being 9 games long and the fall season being 18 games long, I think pretty much every team went into the season knowing that, all right, if we can start well, we have a chance to be in the playoffs by the time June rolls around already. And with that comes the ability to, or the benefit of hosting a first-round playoff game, which, especially considering it's going to be November in Minnesota, is going to be a pretty big benefit for United. So I think the thing that United really had going for them this year was they did a lot of preseason work. They took a trip to England, that they spent a lot of time sort of building the team together. And I think it was that more than anything that allowed them to hit the ground running. You could see it sort of in the first week. They beat San Antonio 2-0 on the road. San Antonio obviously came back and had a chance to, on the final day to steal the spring season title if they could have got a result and if Minnesota hadn't gotten a result. So San Antonio was not a bad team, and Minnesota really outclassed them that week. And I think it was that sort of starting with a flying start that really made the difference for Minnesota.
You know, looking at the roster, obviously it's Ibarra, that's usually a tough player to go against. Simone Brocalello has been a solid addition for Minnesota United. But right now it looks like in the spring season it was Christian Ramirez with 5 goals and 4 assists leading the club with both categories.
Yeah, Ramirez was he was a good story. He was a guy that Minnesota looked at trying to get in last year in the sense that they were hoping he would come in and try out. He was coming out of college. Instead, he signed with Charlotte and USL Pro, mostly, I think, because they were offering him a contract and Minnesota just wanted to bring him in. After the USL Pro season ended last year, they brought him in for a trial and got to know him a little bit and then signed him over the offseason. And like you say, he especially was important this year. Obviously, he led the league in scoring with 5 goals in the spring season and 4 assists and was a key cog in the team's offense. But you looking at that, even in the with the fact that Minnesota lost Pablo Campos to an injury on that preseason trip, Minnesota went into the season thinking, they had no established strikers. Ramirez had 10 goals in USL Pro last year, but who knows if that's going to translate to the NASL. There were a lot of question marks about their ability to score, and Ramirez and his partnership, especially with Ibarra, that you sort of mentioned. Ibarra had a rough year last year. This year he's already scored 3 goals. A lot of that's because he's working well with Ramirez and working well with the team's offense as a whole. You mentioned Simone Brachiello, who didn't start out in the starting 11, but came in. He really provides a veteran presence and really provides something off the wing for United. So you put all of those factors together, and it really translated to addressing the biggest question mark that the team had coming into the season. But as you mentioned, Christian Ramirez is sort of the most visible part of that because he scored so many and scored so many goals that were spectacular in some way as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a crazy game to finish off the spring season, like we've said before. You only really needed a draw to win the title because it had been a 4-point clearance at least before Sunday's game and before that matchup with the Scorpions, because the Cosmos and San Antonio were really breathing down your guys' necks. And it looked like to me that at halftime, maybe as you were saying, the fingernails were already gone because Tampa had a 2-1 lead at half.
Well, as I saw somebody said on Twitter, there's something about Minnesota and Tampa Bay and playing in Tampa Bay that just causes the game to be totally wild. Last year, the last game of the season was Minnesota in Tampa Bay, and it finished 6-4. Omar Daly, who hadn't done anything up to that point after he signed for Minnesota, had a hat trick. Pablo Campos had a couple of goals. And even you go back to the year before with the championship, where Minnesota was leading 2-1 down in Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay came back and ended up winning a shootout. It just a bunch of crazy games, and this one was no different. Minnesota led 1-0, Tampa led 2-1 at halftime, then Minnesota came back with a couple of goals in a 5-minute span, was leading 3-2, half hour away from a win and the spring championship, and then Tampa scores from a corner, and all of a sudden it's 3-3, and Tampa's throwing everything forward, and Minnesota's packing 45 guys into the box, and, pulling people out of the stands to stand in front of the goal, too, and it just... It was nail-biting for everyone. I'm sure fans are still... I'm sure relief was one of the main emotions, along with euphoria for Minnesota's fans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, thankfully, I was able to watch that off of the ESPN3 stream of the week for the NESL, and that was really nail-biting. You're watching and you're seeing it. You see Minnesota take a 3-2 lead from Ibarra's goal in the 61st minute. Then here comes Sanfilippo to tie at 74th. And like you said, they brought out the kitchen sink, and they couldn't get it past the keeper. They just had kept on going. They kept on going, just couldn't find a way to make the upset or make this like a real weekend to remember in the final spring season.
Yeah, and you do have to give Minnesota defense some credit, because even though they had that lead to protect, it wasn't like Tampa had a number of excellent chances that they just, threw over the crossbar or something like that. It was genuinely good defense down the stretch, and that was impressive given the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just absolutely crazy what was going on here. But, congratulations on winning the spring season, and obviously that's going straight to the playoffs. I have to ask this question, obviously, because the next match for Minnesota United is a trip against Sporting Kansas City in the U.S. Open Cup in the fourth round. What is it about this matchup that's going to be very difficult, but at the same time exciting to see Minnesota take on the defending MLS Cup champions?
Well, I think the exciting thing, especially for the guys who are on the field, you talk about matches that players are really looking forward to, and you talk to them, and obviously championship matches like the one in Tampa this weekend, obviously those are big deals for the guys because they have a chance to win something. But second to that is the ability to play MLS teams, because most of these guys being in second division feel like they have something to prove, and especially can do that against an MLS team. So if you ask any of the guys in the locker room, they're going to be really excited about just the opportunity to play an MLS team. And you add that to there being somewhat of a geographical rivalry, obviously that's more prevalent than other sports, but they're certainly near here. A lot of Minnesota fans will be making the trip down, and add on top of that the fact that Kansas City's MLS Cup champions. It's a lot of excitement. In terms of what's difficult, I think it's just a matter of being able to play your game versus sort of those big game jitters, to because, you know, guys are going to be pressing a little bit. It's sort of like a, it's not exactly a championship game, but it's sort of like one for them. So just being able to go on the road in Kansas City and be able to play Minnesota's game rather than start worrying about what the scoreline is in the fifth minute is going to be the most difficult part. But it's certainly exciting for all the fans. And even looking forward beyond that, if Minnesota can beat Kansas City, which is obviously a tall order, if they can do that, then they get to probably host Portland in the next week in Minnesota. So obviously a lot of people are looking forward to that, not least the guys in the front office at United. So it's an exciting thing for the fans, and I think a lot of people are looking forward to it.
What is it about the Lagos family, especially Buzz and Manny, that not only they're native Minnesotans, but how they're able to bring this club, or at least any past Minnesota professional club, to become such a powerhouse, shall we say, even though Minnesota hasn't been in the MLS level yet, and maybe they might be involved in it, you never know. But still, though, what's it like having the Lagos family being behind this club and at the same time Manny managing it the way he's done successfully these last couple of years?
Sure. I think the thing that you see with Lagos is that they're such promoters of soccer, and they love soccer so much, but they also love the Minneapolis market so much that they're just determined to make it work, not only because, you know, Minnesota's a big town and they should have a decent soccer team, but because they love Minnesota. They're from here, and it's a big deal to them. It's a big deal to Manny or to Buzz to not only win, but to do it in Minnesota, and that's a little bit different than maybe you get from other coaches who would just be, you know, they want to win, obviously, but they don't have that local connection that they want to do it in their town, and they want to do it for the fans that are in their town and to grow the game of soccer in Minnesota. So that's something interesting to see, if not special to see.
Absolutely. John, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the Open Cup match. Enjoy your NASL break for the World Cup. And I'll definitely talk to you when we preview the fall season coming up in July.
Sounds great. Last time we previewed it, I think I picked Tampa Bay to win the title in this year and make the sixth in the spring season. So I can't wait to make some more predictions.
Well, that's true, but that probably almost bit you in the rear end if you're going to pick them to to win it all. Next thing you know, it's like they can knock you guys out.
Yeah, well, I'll just have to go counter everything. I'll pick Indy to win the ball season.
Okay.
No wins yet, but I feel I'm coming.
All right, cool. Thank you, John.
All right, thank you.
And that's John Marthaler, great guy over at the Star Tribune over in Minnesota. It was a crazy game, a real, real crazy game down at Allianz Stadium. It was 2-1 Tampa at the half, and then all of a sudden – Minnesota made it 3-2, and then that last goal from Sanfilippo that made it 3-3, and you're thinking to yourself, Tampa Bay is going to play spoiler, and we're going to have a hell of a final weekend in the spring season. But, you know, because once again, San Antonio was involved, the Cosmos were involved, and if Minnesota did not pick up at least by a point, then it would have been a crazy weekend. And, of course, that game ended in a draw. I believe it was 3-3 with Fort Lauderdale and Minnesota. No, 2-2, I'm sorry, 2-2, Fort Lauderdale and San Antonio. And then the Cosmos, they beat Ottawa 2-0, I think it was. 2-0 was the final score. But still, though, a lot of interesting things going on, a lot of interesting things happening here. And it's just one of those things where, hey, you never know what's going to happen. And you just got to say congratulations to Minnesota United FC. You're the 2014 spring season champions of the NASL. And now we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen here over in the fall season once we are done with the World Cup. And hopefully we'll see what happens going on. And let's not forget, some of these teams are also still going to be involved in the U.S. Open Cup. So it's coming up as well. It'll be interesting and see what's going to happen. Now, this is an abbreviated Red Bulls segment. Normally it's an hour long, but I've abbreviated it to half an hour because we want to get ready for the World Cup, and let's see what happens. And let's not also forget, everyone, that the New York Red Bulls will be facing the New York Cosmos in Long Island over at Schuertz Stadium on June 14th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. If you don't have tickets going to Schuertz Stadium, you can watch it at home, as this match will be the U.S. soccer stream of the round. The New York Red Bulls and the New York Cosmos facing each other in round four for the very first time. These two sides will face each other for the very first time. So it's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen this coming Saturday, June 14th. But how about that win Sunday, late Sunday afternoon, early Sunday evening? For over 12 years, the New York Red Bulls, also formerly known as the New York, New Jersey Metro Stars, did not win a game in Gillette Stadium since June 29th, 2002. Clint Mathis, Lisi, was on the team back in the day when the Metro Stars last won a game, coming back, Clint Mathis, from the U.S. men's national team after being eliminated by Germany in the quarterfinals of the 2002 World Cup. It's just one of those great things, one of those great moments that you're seeing. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great moment when you have finally gotten a victory at a place you haven't won in a very, very long time. No Thierry Henry. No Jaimison Olave, due to the fact that the Revolution ripped up the grass field for the friendly for Portugal and went back to the field turf. No Dax McCarty. He probably would have played in this game, but because of the fractured kneecap he received at Kansas City, thankfully it's not that bad that he'll be able to play hopefully against Toronto when they're done with a two-week break. Was not on the field. Tim Cahill playing for Australia in the World Cup. Roy Miller playing for Costa Rica in the World Cup. Five players, top-notch players, not on the field for the Red Bulls, and they pull off a big 2-0 victory against the New England Revolution, who are at the moment at the top of the Eastern Conference. And with this victory by the Red Bulls, they are back in a playoff position, as they have right now are in the fifth position and above the red line. Now, here's the thing. There's a break in the league for 2 weeks. There's also right now a possibility of them with two games in the Open Cup. If they defeat the Cosmos, they will either face on the road in Philadelphia or at home against Harrisburg. So we'll wait and see what's going to happen here. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it should be interesting to see what's going to happen. Now, let me just say this. Luis Robles has been absolutely fantastic, a rock in net, 9 to 10 saves in that match against New England. And you know what? You never thought you'd ever see Robles making these great, unbelievable saves, and at the same time saving an own goal off the leg of Ibrahim Sakai, who was trying to help out, and then he smothers it. If he didn't make a save, he gobbled up the ball either in the air or on the ground. It's just been unbelievable to see what the heck is going on. It's just an unbelievable thing. Here are the Red Bulls They are on a four-match winless streak. And then they break it by going up to Foxborough. Mike Petke telling his players, they are disrespecting us. They tore up the grass field so that they can take advantage of them, because they knew Thierry Henry and Heimerson Olave were not going to play on the field turf. It's just one of those things that you had to take advantage of, and they did. And they did so brilliantly. How about that cross on the free kick by Lloyd Sam from the near side? A wide-open Eric Alexander, thanks to the fact that Bobby Shuttleworth collided into his own defender. Collided into his own defender, and it's a wide-open header opportunity. I mean, if Eric Alexander was going to miss from there, serious questions were coming. New England is an improved team. New England is and was the better team. And yes, let's be fair here. They outplayed the Red Bulls. But the only thing that equalized, the only equalizer for the Red Bulls right now in that game was Luis Robles. I mean, Robles was playing out of his mind. Robles was playing fantastic football, being the keeper that, oh, my God, it's just been unbelievable. What the hell is going on with this guy? Just unbelievable what we're seeing from him with all those saves. Now, here is something interesting that I never thought I would see, because Mike Petke put Sakaya in the defensive midfielder position. And he was giving cover not just for Armando, but for Matt Miazga. Matt Miazga getting his first professional game as a starter. And I have to admit, the future is now. Chris Duvall as your right back. Matt Miazga is one of your center backs. The kids are deserving that opportunity, and they are looking fantastic. I'm telling you right now, the kids are deserving an opportunity. Connor Wade, maybe he'll get his opportunity again. Mara, we don't know what's going to happen. He'll probably be in the Open Cup games to give Robles a break. But the truth is that I would rather see Robles in the goal against the Cosmos this Saturday, and then he deserves his break. Boy, I tell you, you just cannot stop raving about Luis Robles. Peggy Lou Yandula gets back on the scoreboard, on the score sheet, rips that sucker in the second half to make it 2-0. Red Bulls, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable what the heck is going on in that game. You don't have your big guns. You don't have your tough guys. And then here comes this makeshift lineup, and they pull off a jinx breaker, defeating the Revolution by a final of 2-0. One more place to break a jinx, and that is, of course, Toyota Park in Chicago. They have to go and break that one. They have to go in August to break that jinx, because that one is a major jinx that needs to be broken. Since the construction of that place, they haven't won a match at all. Either losses or draws. They have to go, and they have to find a way to now get 3 points. It's just absolutely important now. And when we get to August, we'll see what happens. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, This has been amazing to watch, to see how they play, to see how they were doing well. And the Revolution are a good team. Mullins, I was amazed that Jay Heap subbed Mullins out of the game at the start of the second half because, he did nothing wrong. He did nothing wrong. I felt that he should have just stayed in the game because I think he probably would have at least equalized. He was so close a couple of times. Mullins has been a godsend for the Revolution on their attacking end. They've been playing better, playing much better, playing stronger, playing like they should be leading the Eastern Conference. And now we're seeing what's happening with the Red Bulls. Maybe this is the game that now starts to turn everything around. Maybe finally everyone can start playing better, being on the same page. Obviously, they have to wait for Thierry Henry to come back from his television duties with, I think it's either the BBC or ITV. I don't remember which one it is, but he'll be helping out with coverage of the World Cup over there. So it's one of those UK outlets over there. Just have to wait for Dex McCarty to be 100% fit. And, of course, waiting for both Roy Miller and Tim Cahill to come back from World Cup duty. Many believe both Costa Rica and Australia are probably going to get eliminated after they're finished with their group stage match. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens as we get going here, moving forward. And all we can say is for the Red Bulls, they looked fantastic. Great job by Mike Petke to get this team ready to play. Great job by Mike Petke, just, tying it all up. I shouldn't say tie it all up, but just to, tie it all up, because you want to get those guys motivated. You want to tie everything together and say, listen, they're disrespecting us. They're disrespecting us, and they don't think that we can win. They don't think that we can win on their field and everything. So you know what? Good. Good. Let them know. Because I'm telling you right now, what Mike Petke did was absolutely incredible. Just absolutely incredible. To get them ready to go, to get them motivated, to get them moving. Duvall played another spectacular game as right back. Miazga did a spectacular job at center back. I think it goes to show you that the kids are ready, that the kids are eager, and they want to just go ahead and play to show not just, Petke, but to show everyone that they can play the game and they are ready to go. Great job with the draft. Great job with the academy for the Red Bulls, finding the talent, the scouting, just finding everything. Mm-hmm. So, that's the exciting thing, That's the exciting thing right now. It's going to be a big game on Saturday, obviously, but just to finish off with this big win, it's a great, great feeling to have a win like this before you face the New York Cosmos in the U.S. Open Cup. Now, this is going to be a match where everyone's already been jawing away, talking, jawing, everything. Everyone on Twitter, Facebook has been posting, special posters saying this is going to be what New York soccer is all about. And the truth is, it's starting to. That's what's going to happen. Something that none of us have ever seen before. Brooklyn versus Brooklyn Italians, NPSL team against New York Cosmos, that's not real competition. Obviously, the Cosmos were the better team, and they advanced, but that's not real competition. No offense to the Brooklyn Italians. I know they're a tough bunch, but still. You know, you're facing against men. But once again, if you're from New York City or you're from the area, and I don't care what anyone says, okay, to hell with this whole New York proper baloney. New York City proper, that doesn't mean anything anymore, okay? Many people who live out in Long Island, northern New Jersey, north central New Jersey, southern Connecticut, that live near Westchester County and the city, it's all up for grabs, the bragging rights. Because there's been so much jawing back and forth. I mean, you've seen it with Yankee fans, Met fans, Islander fans, Ranger fans, Devil fans, Mets fans now in Brooklyn, Knicks fans, the Jets and the Giants. And once again, the Jets and the Giants represent New York, but they play in New Jersey and they practice in New Jersey. So guess what? We are all together. It counts. You can claim New York City proper all you want. Doesn't mean anything anymore. The talk, the energy, the buzz is growing from within the five boroughs, Long Island, Westchester County, Rockland County, Southern Connecticut, North Jersey, North Central Jersey. This is what's going to happen. This is what it could have happened if the New York Cosmos were in Major League Soccer. But instead, well, instead, Ron Garber decided to allow a fraud team to come into the area. So all you can really do is, are we going to have a real rivalry with the Cosmos, or are we going to have a fake rivalry with New York City FC? I mean, that's the truth. That is the truth. But we'll have to wait and see what the situation will be. But it should be exciting. It should be a lot of fun. Head on over to Hofstra University at Short Stadium. Of course, they got rid of their college football program, but they play I understand they play lacrosse in that stadium as well, but there's going to be lacrosse now, no more college football. They're going to play their soccer games over there. Hopefully they're going to see if they do get their stadium from the help from New York State and stuff. But you know what? This is going to be a lot of fun. Now, I will admit that it's not that I'm sour on the matchup. I just feel that let's play this as a fifth-round game if it's possible, because when the World Cup games for those group stage games, those last games that, you know, they played both games at the same time, if you would have played this game in the fifth round on that Tuesday or Wednesday night after 6 o'clock, then you know what? It's on. Berg should be playing the Red Bulls. Philadelphia should be playing the Cosmos. That's my opinion about it. And you still have, and then you set it up for a fifth round match, and then you know what? Off you go, because now everyone can concentrate on it. Everyone can concentrate on it. You can make it 8 o'clock, 8:30, whatever time you want. So you do allow the people to come over. They come over. All the fans come over. And there it is. You have your excitement. You have your excitement right there. Because that's where I think it would be the best for U.S. soccer. Now, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and that's fine. Because don't you want this to be the centerpiece match for the U.S. Open Cup? Don't you want this to be the centerpiece match for the U.S. Open Cup, and then all of a sudden everything works well? So, once again, it's a situation where you just have to say that for the Cosmos and for the Red Bulls, it's going to be exciting. I mean, the talk's been going on for a good, good long time. And it's great. The build-up has been fantastic. My only problem is the timing of it because of the World Cup, and it's I don't know how many people are going to be over there. That's my problem, the timing of it. But you know what? Let's see what happens. Hopefully it will be a filled stadium or at least near to capacity. That's the hope. That's the hope right now. And maybe, just maybe, maybe it's going to be exciting and fun. I know it will be, because this is what New Yorkers love to do, no matter what sport it is. They bring a lot of energy before it, during it, and then after it. This is what and why this match is going to be the stream of the round. And if you can't get there, you go watch it on YouTube. It should be exciting. It should be very, very exciting. I know I can't wait. I know that I cannot wait for this. I cannot wait to get it ready to go. I cannot wait for this Open Cup game to come. But like I've said before, I wish this would be a fifth round match set up and not a fourth round match set up. Just remember, this is not a blind draw. This is not a blind draw. The U.S. Soccer Open Cup, their Open Cup committee picks and chooses on regional locations for the best matchup for the Open Cup. And then the coin flip determines who's going to be the host, if both sides want to host it. That is how it works. So we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen. And then afterwards, we'll have to wait and see what the situation will be. But as we continue on here, we're going to finish it up here once again. You can catch this great matchup. If you're not able to go to Long Island, it will be the stream of the round. You go to U.S. Soccer's YouTube channel, and they will be showing it, as well as on NESL Live. It should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. I'm assuming JP Della Camera will be the host of He'll definitely be the host, or shall I say the play-by-play man for the Cosmos games. We'll see what happens. We shall see how this whole thing sets up. But definitely, it's going to be a lot of fun. Finally, once again, everyone, this is the last 40 Scenes Fire show up until July as we get ready for the World Cup here. Join me this coming Thursday with Kartik Krishnayer from World Soccer Talk and Soccerly, as he'll be my co-host. And once again, we're going to bring over some special guests with us. Once again, covering England will be Gary Gazza-Richards, the former Fox Soccer analyst, Diana Germano, the former host of The Treble for covering Italy, Eric Krakauer, who covers Portugal for Soccerly and for football.com, John Jagu of Big Soccer covering Mexico's national team, and, of course, late entry, Marios C. Sfatos, who will be covering Greece as he did the Greece match at Red Bull Arena, the friendly. And, of course, Jonathan Johnson, who covers France as well as French Ligue 1 for ESPN FC, for beIN Sports USA, and other news departments from within Europe. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait for the World Cup to get underway, to get it started. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. I cannot wait to see it. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a lot of fun. So all I can say, guys, is this, is that sit back, relax, have fun with these review shows, because it's going to be absolutely spectacular. And I promise you, we're going to have a lot of fun with it. We're going to enjoy ourselves with it. It's going to be great. It's really, really going to be great. I cannot wait for it, and I can't wait for you guys to listen in. You can listen to these games over here, blogtalkradio.com/4YearsTeamsFire. It will be exciting. It will be a lot of fun, and it's going to be awesome. I know it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be great. It's really, really going to be great. I can't wait. I want to thank my guests, my good friend Kevin Laramie, Off the Woodwork podcast, John Marthaler from the Star Tribune covering Minnesota United. And you guys, thank you as always for listening to the show. I always appreciate you guys giving me your ears. Join me again this Thursday. We're going to start our World Cup coverage, reviewing all the games. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being a part of this, especially this World Cup special that's going to start this coming Thursday. As always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.